Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Quantum Communicator. And I'm your host, Victor Schiller, and I'm glad to have you with me today. And I'm really excited for today's conversation because we're going to talk about concepts that revolve around our health and our happiness and the way we think and the way that our thoughts can have an effect on our bodies and our lives in general. And I'm really excited about this concept because I love talking about it. And I think that the spin that we're going to have on it today will be very fascinating to you and very appealing to you. Did you know that today about 133 million Americans, nearly half of all adults, live with some sort of chronic medical condition? And in fact, a study by the Johns Hopkins University reported that 75% of healthcare costs in America are spent on people with chronic illnesses, and the amount of chronic illnesses is rising, according to the Center for Disease Control. And that's why I'm so delighted to have my guest today, Dr. Larry Birkelhammer, because he knows a lot about chronic illness, and he knows a lot about what we can do and how we can empower ourselves to not only overcome chronic illness, but what we can do to just enhance our lives in general and bring us more satisfaction and bring us more happiness and more fulfillment in every day, in everyday life. If you don't know who Dr. Larry Birkelhammer is, he has lived with several chronic medical conditions since childhood. And for decades, he endured the frustration of not knowing the causes of his physical problems. And then well into adulthood, he was diagnosed with two autoimmune diseases and a primary immunodeficiency disease. And at the same time, he was told there was no known cures for any of them, and that a treatment would make some of his conditions worse. And then what happened was he became curious about what practical steps he and others could do to improve health and well-being. And he trained with several world leaders in psycho-oncology, psychophysiology, and psychoneuroimmunology. And finally, he discovered that there was a lot of hope in what he calls self-discovering and training and value-based behaviors, and we're going to dive into that. But also, he wrote a book that helps others with similar conditions, and he calls it In Your Hands, New Hope for People with Chronic Medical Conditions. And so without further ado, I'd like to welcome my guest, Larry Birkelhammer, to the show. Larry, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited to talk to you today about your book and just concepts in general.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Victor. I'm looking forward to sharing information with your audience that I find has been very helpful, sharing the research, showing what has been most helpful, not only for people with chronic illness, but really for everyone who just wants to live a happier life. Because one of the things that happened to me was I discovered that in my research, and I'm not a lab researcher, I'm more of a journalist researcher in that I study the studies. I don't have a lab. But what I discovered in studying the literature that's out there, the published literature from science journals, is that there is a pretty strong association between happiness and health. So one of the most interesting things I discovered and that I teach is that aside from getting good medical care and practicing good self-care through diet and exercise and sleep and so forth, one of the best things we can do for our health is to do whatever we can do to improve our happiness. And that was pretty mind-boggling when I discovered that happy people tend to be healthier people, and unhappy people tend to develop chronic illness earlier in life.
Very interesting. So from a practical perspective for us, you know, if we're just talking about not necessarily someone who's dealing with chronic illness, although we may have chronic illness or we may know someone with chronic illness, but let's just take the average ordinary person who doesn't really have chronic illness What are your recommendations, or what are you seeing that would be applicable to us so that we can try to or make our best effort and put ourselves in the best situation to ensure that we are playing out what you had suggested, which
right.
is to be that happy person, to have that happy lifestyle, to give us the best shot at continued good health.
Yeah. So there are a number of things, and in my book, In Your Own Hands, I talk about, I have a separate chapter for each one of those things. The one that I put at the very top, and I put it there because it's the one thing that has more evidence than anything else, and that has to do with social connections. So people who live isolated lives, people who don't have good close relationships, romantic relationships, family relationships, friendships, good work relationships, people who tend to have problems in relationship and who have fewer friends and fewer social connections, the evidence is very clear that those people develop chronic illness in middle age much earlier than other people. They're generally unhappy people, and that if we want to be happy and healthy, the single most important thing is we need to cultivate social connections. So we need to work at improving our family relationships, work at improving romantic relationships, work at improving friendships and increasing the number of friends we have. And I say work at because, you know, it's very easy to just take the easy way and just wait for other people to do that. But it doesn't happen. So, for example, if I'm out in public in a market or anywhere, I talk to strangers. When I'm with friends or colleagues or family or with my wife, whenever there's some tension in the air, I name it. I say, oh, gee, I'm wondering if it seems like there's some tension in the air, and can we talk about this? And so everything you do to improve relationships, it will improve your state of well-being. And well-being is the scientific term for happiness. It's the same thing. It's just a lot of people, when they hear the word happiness, they think of a superficial form of happiness, the kind of happiness you get from eating a tasty dessert.
Sure.
That's not the kind of happiness that I'm talking about. So I generally use the term well-being, which is a more lifelong type of happiness. And the first thing that brings about that, or that improves that level of happiness, is social connectivity. There are numerous studies out there showing that that the people with the most social support are the happiest and healthiest, and the people with the least number of friends are the least healthy and the least happy. And I'm not talking about Facebook friends. That's not the kind of friends. I'm talking about the kind of friends who are there for you in time of need, the kind of friends who will ask you for help in their time of need, and that you can be there for them just as they can be there for you, those kinds of friends. People with those kinds of friends tend to live healthier, happier, richer lives.
Well, that's very fascinating, and it doesn't surprise me, but that's fascinating that sort of deeper happiness, the well-being, you name it as well-being, and you identify it as a well-being, that it's related to the level of well-being that we have is related to our social interactions. That's very fascinating. And now that's a relationship that we have with other people. But what about the relationship that we have with ourselves and the things that we talk about? You know, we talk to other people and we think things about other people, but isn't there some role in the thoughts that we share with ourselves, and that the things that we think and we hold within ourselves that can also have a profound impact on not only our level of happiness, but our level of well-being and personal health?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really important point. One of the things, and I also have a whole chapter on this, is self-acceptance. And, you know, people have the wrong idea about, a lot of people have the wrong idea about self-acceptance. In fact, there are a lot of self-help books out there on self-acceptance that are not based on any hard evidence. And so it's really important that we learn how to be comfortable with ourselves, that we learn to love and appreciate ourselves, that we learn to practice good self-care, that we learn to value ourselves. And so the way to do this is to accept every part of ourselves. And that's easier said than done. But here's how the evidence shows that it's done, and that is that when you have a thought, so typically part of being human is we have uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. Some of the most uncomfortable are feelings around shame. When we're feeling shame, we just want to hide. We want to run away. We want to suppress that feeling. It's too uncomfortable. That, what happens is when we suppress our thoughts, when we suppress our emotions, we end up it's a self-rejection. If we reject our thoughts and we reject our feelings, we are practicing rejection of ourself. It's the opposite of self-acceptance. So the secret to self-acceptance is to allow ourselves to fully experience our inner subjective experience. So when we have an unpleasant thought, when we have a really unpleasant feeling, emotion, unpleasant sensation, the idea is to allow ourselves to fully experience it. If we try to push it away, we're pushing ourselves away because our thoughts and our feelings are part of who we are. So the more we can accept our thoughts and feelings and allow ourselves to fully experience whatever that feels like, however awful it feels like, the more we learn to accept ourselves. And that's how that's how the research shows that we develop true self-acceptance, the kind of self-acceptance that will always be there for us.
That's pretty fascinating. And I like that. I like that idea of allowing ourselves to take in the whole subjective experience, or the subjective perspective, because so many times when we think about something, we automatically associate those thoughts with us, and we personally attach ourselves to those thoughts, and then it's in some ways those thoughts become who we are, instead of just separating them from ourselves and understanding that if we let it play out and we identify it for what it is, which is a thought, and we sort of not eliminate it from us, but detach ourselves personally from it and view it from that observer standpoint, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
That's exactly it. You've just described it perfectly. Instead of trying to get rid of the thought, by embracing the thought, we accept not only the thought, but we accept ourselves. And so it's really all about, it's about being fully present with whatever our experience is. And there's an expression, there are several expressions, similar things that all have the same meaning. One is, if you don't want it, you'll have it. Another expression is, what you resist persists. The harder we try to push away unwanted thoughts and unwanted feelings, the stronger they get. I saw a cartoon once. In fact, it's in one of my PowerPoint slides of a little girl sitting with a giant monster, and the little girl is offering the monster tea. And that's kind of how it is. You know, when we have really, really, you know, thoughts and feelings that are just really icky and we do not want to have them, the harder we try to push them away, the stronger they get, the more they bother us. Whereas if we just accept them and offer them tea and let them be there, then they can't harm us. They can only harm us by fighting them.
Sure, and by taking that time to just observe them and invite them in, so to speak, and to take that in, in some way too, it actually takes away that power that it has over us too. It no longer becomes a thing that has power over us or disempowers us. We actually are empowering ourselves with the ability to stand there and look at it objectively without connecting a negative emotion to it or anything like that, but to view it objectively.
You know, that's actually one of the best ways to empower ourselves. Again, you're right on. It's like, you know, it's all about empowerment, and we empower ourselves by allowing ourselves to own whatever we're experiencing. That's the ticket to empowerment. We disempower ourselves when we try to push away our icky thoughts and feelings.
Well, that's been very helpful, and I really appreciate that. You know, I've heard some of these concepts and some of these ideas, but the way that you describe them and the way that you're sharing them is in a new way, and it's really nice to hear that because it resonates with me, and I'm sure it's going to resonate with other people when they listen to this as well. But I wanted to take some time. We've got some time here. We've got a few minutes that we can talk about your book, because we really haven't jumped into the book and talked about the book itself and specifically about the book. We've made some references. Would you mind sharing with us a little bit about your book and why you wrote it and who it is written for and what it
means
for people?
You know, when I was first writing it, when I first submitted the manuscript, the editor said, this is a great book for people with chronic illness. And I said, well, I think really it's for everyone. It's not just for people with chronic illness. This book would actually appeal to anyone who's interested in learning how they can live a more fulfilling life. And my editor said, well, yeah, but that's too broad a market, so we're going to market it to the chronic illness crowd. And I said, okay, well, that's all right, but we're missing out on people. The fact is, the messages in my book are for everyone. And basically, the way it came about is I was always intrigued by why some people who I noticed, before I even started looking at the research, that the people I knew who were the happiest people also seemed to feel well more often. And the people who seemed unhappy seemed often to suffer with headaches or arthritis or other things and sleep disturbances. Now, you might think, well, and this is why I got into the research, I thought, well, maybe the people who are unhappy because they're suffering with physical maladies, and the people who are happier are happy because physically they're just healthier, and so of course they're happier. And so when I started looking at the research, I realized that, no, there's more to it than that. It's actually that, you know, you wonder about the chicken and egg thing, but it turns out we can give ourselves a happier, richer life by practicing certain things, some of the things we've been talking about. And when we do here's how it is. I'm going to explain it in a different way. Emotional distress is deadly, because emotional distress, people don't realize this, but every thought and every feeling has physiological correlates. So whenever we experience emotional distress, that causes physiological stress. And we all know this, because whenever you have found yourself going into a rage, you feel tight in your body. That's not healthy. The heart rate increases. The blood pressure jumps up. It's very unhealthy. Whenever you feel yourself getting really stressed, extremely anxious about anything, heart rate increases, blood pressure increases, stress hormones start being secreted at a much higher rate in the body. Very unhealthy. We need the stress hormones because we need to be able to physically act in case we are physically attacked. But most of the time, in fact, it's pretty rare that we're being physically attacked. Most of the time when our stress hormones are coursing through us, it's because of emotional distress. And that emotional distress is causing physiologic stress that is not helpful. Now, physiologic stress, short term, is harmless. The problem is, most of us go through the day, every day, getting stressed out by things that are in our heads. It's not a real stressor. For example, someone cuts us off in traffic. Okay, it's already happened. It's the past. And yet, we hold on to it. Either go into a rage or fear, anxiety. We're stuck in traffic and we're late for an appointment. Well, going over and over in our heads about how we're going to be late and thinking about all the terrible consequences of being late, that keeps stressing us out more and more. The reality is, when we're stuck in traffic, I often feel gratitude that I have a cell phone and I can call the people and tell them I'm stuck in traffic, I'm sorry, I'm going to be late. And then I put it out of my mind because it's not going to do me any good to stress myself out. And every time I stress myself out like that, over and over again, that emotional distress is increasing my physiologic stress. And when physiologic stress is chronic on a daily basis, that is very unhealthy. It leads to all kinds of chronic illnesses, acute illnesses. We're more likely to get colds and flu when we're stressed out. And also, we're just not going to be happy if we're stressed. Who wants to be stressed out all day long? So the more we can just own our feelings and let them go by and accept that, oh yeah, there's that thought, there's that feeling, and I'm just going to step back from it right now because I've done all I can do and there's nothing more I can do about it, so I'm just going to let it go. Well, when I do that, I can also let the stress go, and my level of physiologic stress goes way down, which is much, much better for my health and much, much better for my happiness.
Absolutely. No, that's a great approach, and I like what you said, that you just acknowledge it for what it is, then you step back and you just let it go. I mean, let it pass before you. And I mean, just thinking of things in isolated incidents in my own mind, I absolutely agree with you that most of the time the event has already passed or it's out of our control. We can't do anything to control what is or what has been. But yet we get caught up in these emotional responses to it, and it's to no avail. It doesn't change anything. I that's going to be a big takeaway for me today, is to just make sure that when I'm looking at things that have happened, especially things that just are, and I can't do anything about it, or things that have happened, I can't do anything about it, to just step back and just observe it and just acknowledge all the feelings and the emotions that go with it, but realize that I'm powerless to change anything, and I just have to acknowledge things as they are. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's very healthy to do that. I want to mention something else that's also very empowering, and this other thing also dramatically reduces our level of stress. It has to do with power of choice. How many times do we all find ourselves, it's just part of being human, we find ourselves saying, oh, I have to go to this doctor's appointment, or I have to go to the store, or I have to go somewhere. And I don't feel like going, but I've got to go. And I end up just feeling sad or maybe stressed, depressed about it. Well, the reality is, and I tell people this all the time, in fact, in my class at the College of Marin here in the San Francisco Bay Area, I love to announce to the class, usually in the third class, I say, there's nothing in this world that you have to do. And people are like, well, what do you mean? I have to go to work. My kids have to go to school and all this. And I say, no, they don't. No, you don't have to go to work. And I ask them, and they look perplexed. And I say, well, what would happen if you didn't go to work? And they say, well, if I didn't go to work, I'd end up homeless, so I have to go to work. And I say, well, wait a minute. So it sounds to me like you're making a choice to go to work because you're choosing to provide for yourself, to provide for your family. That's a choice, a very wise choice. So the more we can recognize throughout the day that we are making choices all day long, the healthier and the happier we will be. It's not happy making to spend throughout the day go around saying, oh, I have to do, talk about all the things that I have to do. You know, look at my calendar. I think, oh, man, I've got so many things that I have to do today. So what I recommend is every night before bed, look at your calendar and preface each one of those things on your calendar for the next day with, I am choosing to. And then every morning, same thing, when you get up every morning, look at your calendar and preface everything on your calendar with, I am choosing to do this. And don't leave it at that, but to make it more real, to make it work more for you, when you see those things and you're prefacing each activity with, I'm choosing to, remind yourself of why you're choosing it. What value does it meet for you? There's a reason that you put these things in your calendar. They mean something to you. They add value to your life in some way. And so remind yourself of those things. That is the path to real empowerment and a real deep sense of increased well-being.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. And, you know, you're absolutely right. And I appreciate you bringing that. I agree completely. And I appreciate you for bringing that forward because so many times I hear people saying it, and I know I've said it myself, or I've had that mentality, I have to do this, or, yeah, I've got to do this, or I've got to do that. And that's not reality. And I think, you know, in what you said, going back and looking at your events, the things that you have coming up or the things that you're going to be doing, understand that you have the choice and you do have the choice, ultimately having that choice is a very powerful position to put yourself in. Larry, this has been a fascinating and a wonderful conversation. You've shared so many gems of insight and wisdom, and I know that there are people who are listening to this and they're thinking the same thing. And so I'm wondering, if someone is interested in finding out more about you or connecting with you, what's the best way for someone to find out more about you and how to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so there are a few ways. One is my book, which is available in bookstores all over the country, or you can buy it online from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or in my area, a lot of bookstores carry it. The title of the book is In Your Own Hands. The subtitle is New Hope for People with Chronic Medical Conditions, Mindfulness-Based Practices for Mastering Well-Being. But the book is really for people who just want to improve well-being, improve happiness. So the book is one way. For any of your listeners who happen to be living in the San Francisco Bay Area, especially the North Bay, San Francisco, Marin County, Sonoma County, West Contra Costa, any of those areas, I teach a class at College of Marin in Marin County called In Your Own Hands, the same title as the book, and they can take that class. It's offered year-round. Another way is to tune into my website. My website is www.larryberkelhammer.com. It's Larry, B-E-R, I'll start the spelling again, B-E-R-K-E-L-H-A-M-M-E-R. So it's larryberkelhammer.com, my website. And then also I write for Psych Central, so you can check out my blog on Psych Central.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to join me today and share your insight, your wisdom, share the things that you found through your research. And I just wanted to thank you and express my gratitude to you for just taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me, Victor.
Not a problem. My pleasure. So if you're listening to this interview and it sounds fascinating to you and it sounds like, you know, that you've discovered something here today, whether it's understanding the power of choice as we finished up with, or the power of your thoughts, or you've understood better now the impact of having that sense of well-being, of happiness, deep happiness. If any of these things have resonated with you, please make sure that you go check out Larry's website and find out more about what he has to offer. He's got a lot of resources on his website. He's got a blog that he updates with videos, and he's got question Q&As. He also has other interviews on here, so make sure you check it out. I know you'll enjoy it. Thank you so much for joining me today on Quantum Communicator. I appreciate it. Have yourself a good day, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Goodbye.